Please open your Bibles to Luke chapter 23, where we're going to start in verse number 5 in just a moment. It is Good Friday. It is very early in the morning on that 14th day of the Jewish first month. The Sanhedrin had officially condemned Jesus to death as a blasphemer right after sunrise during their official trial at the council chamber in the temple complex. Immediately thereafter, they took Jesus over to the Praetorium, which is the Tower of Antonia. And because it's a Roman enclave, they would not enter it. Instead, they forced the governor, Pilate, to come out and meet them on Jewish territory. They accused Jesus of being a lawbreaker and of denying taxes for Caesar and of claiming that he's the king of the Jews. And so Pilate, instead of rubber stamping this accusation, takes Jesus inside the praetorium and engages him in an official interview about this claim that he is the king of the Jews. And it doesn't take but just a few minutes for Pilate to figure out that Jesus is not claiming to be the king of the Jews, like Herod the Great had been king of the Jews, that he is instead talking in much more spiritual language. Jesus even talks about the fact, everyone who believes in the truth will come to me. And Pilate's response was, what's truth? And after that, he comes back outside to the Jewish council and tells them in no uncertain terms, I find no crime in him, no guilt. There's no capital crime to be executed for here. And the chief priests then get really agitated because they thought this was a done deal. They were sure that Jesus would have been on the cross in a matter of minutes after them delivering him to Pilate. And Pilate's not going that route. And so they began making all sorts of additional charges, and Jesus doesn't respond to any of it. Even when Pilate tries to solicit that, do you hear what they're talking about? Do you have anything you want to say back to them about this? And he remains completely mute. And it seems as if he will not talk when in the presence of this Sanhedrin. And so Pilate is shocked by this. He's amazed. And while they continue, they eventually do something that Pilate sees as a potential way of resolving this for himself. So Luke chapter 23 is the only one that tells this part of the story. Luke 23:5. But they were urgent, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place. Now, Judea here, the way that it's used, means all through the lands of the Jews. And that would include Galilee, not just simply Judea. And so that's what they point out. He started all of this up in Galilee and has brought it here to Jerusalem. Then, verse 6, when Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. Because you see, Galilee is not Roman territory. There are some Romans stationed there, but they seem to be more like highway patrol people, keeping the Roman roads safe. That seems to be what the centurion at Capernaum was probably tasked with, because Galilee was under Herod Antipas, a client king of the Roman Empire. So When he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod. So Pilate has just now figured out, oh man, I can dodge this one by just sending him to the Jewish guy that's actually in charge of Galilee. For Herod was himself in Jerusalem at that time. That makes perfect sense. Herod Antipas, even though he's of Edomite blood back along one part of his family tree, he is also Jewish, and his family has been practicing Judaism for several generations now. So he is here for Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread week. And so he's in his palace up on the upper city over on the west side of town. Pilate has Jesus taken by a contingent of his Roman guards away from the Antonia Fortress, down through the Tyropian Valley, the Cheesemaker's Valley, and then up the hill to the palace of the Herodians. Verse 8, when Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him, because he'd heard about him, and he was hoping to see some sign done by him. Now, remember, this is Herod, who had arrested John the Immerser 2 years previous, held him in custody for an entire year, because John was basically telling Herod the same thing he tells everybody. You need to repent. You need to change the way you think and bring it into alignment with God, and you need to start fresh. You should not be married to your brother's wife, because Herod and Herodias had divorced each of their spouses in order to culminate an affair that they were having in marriage. And so John had called them to repentance, and that got him arrested. And then eventually, you remember that Herodias manipulated everything to get John executed. That was about a year ago. And John had done no miracles. Keep that in mind, none. And so even when Herod talked to John in prison from time to time, he got no miracles. But after John was dead, you remember briefly, when he was hearing stories about miracles being done all over the place, Herod had thought that maybe John had been resurrected from the dead. And then he found out that it was actually Jesus that he was hearing stories about, and he really wanted to see him, but never got the opportunity, because by then, Jesus was trying his best to stay away from a lot of these larger crowds up in Galilee. He was spending time over in Tyre and Sidon area. He was spending time over in Decapolis, which is on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, and that's outside of Herod's Galilean jurisdiction. So now, suddenly, he has this prophet, this miracle worker, dumped in his lap, and he's pretty excited by it. He wants him to do something. Verse 9, so he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. So Jesus won't talk to Herod, but notice verse 10. The chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him. So once again, it seems as if when the Sanhedrin, or any part thereof, is in the room, Jesus is not talking. So Herod gets nothing. No words, and most definitely no miracle. And after a little bit of this, Herod tires of the whole situation and decides to make light of Jesus. Verse 11, so Herod with his soldiers, these would be probably a mixture of Jewish soldiers and non-Jewish auxiliaries. So Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. So they made fun of his claim to be king of the Jews. Now, Herod Antipas is the son of Herod the Great, who last held that title, king of the Jews. Antipas became the tetrarch of Galilee and Berea and some other places at the death of his father in AD 4. So this is BC 4, and this is AD 33. So this guy has been in charge for almost 40 years now. And so he mocks him over this claim that he's the king of the Jews, and even does this. Then, arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. This clothing probably got some purple or scarlet in it, some sort of clothing coming out of Herod's closet. Remember that Herod is both Roman and Jewish, and in Roman society, wearing purple on your public clothing was a sign of how far up society's chain you were located, how far up the food chain you were. And so he's got plenty of purple clothing. So he arrays him in that, having mocked him for the claim to be king of the Jews, and sends him back with this message. Even though it's not mentioned in this part, it will be mentioned in a moment. I don't see any reason why he should be executed. He hasn't done any capital crime. Verse 12, Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Now that's not explained, but more than likely Luke is referencing the fact that when Pilate first arrived in 26, he'd had a chip on his shoulder, I suppose you could say, and he had tried to force the Jewish people to accommodate Romans in their country and in their lives. And that would have been a problem for a high-placed Jewish official, a Roman citizen as well, like the Tetrarch of Galilee and Perea, Herod Antipas. And so they probably got off on the wrong foot at the very beginning of Pilate's tenure. But now suddenly, because Pilate had made it possible for Herod Antipas to meet Jesus in person and then come to the conclusion he wasn't that big a deal after all, which is false, but that's what he came to, that got them over the bump. And probably they spent time socializing with each other from there on for the next 3 years or so, which is all the tenure left for Pontius Pilate. Verse 13, Pilate then called the chief priests and the rulers of the people. And he said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him." So I didn't find him guilty of a capital crime. Verse 15, "Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us." So here is the declaration a second time that Jesus is not guilty of a capital crime. And Pilate has no intention of executing him. Herod didn't even give a reason for it. "Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him." Now, verse 16, a little bit tricky as to where to fit it in, but I'm going to throw it in here. "I will therefore punish and release him." Punish here means to beat up. And so it seems as if Pilate is offering a concession to them, a compromise, if you will. "Look, you guys feel so strongly that this is a bad dude, that he's insulted your sensitivities. He's claimed to be your king when in fact he has no reason, you know, to be king. I don't want to execute him. So I tell you what, I will have him flogged really bad, you know, beat with a cat and nine tails equivalent. And then I'm going to let him go. That should be punishment and shame enough. That should solve the problem. It is at this point, then, we should go to the Matthew 27 passage, verse number 15, and see that he's actually trying to make his amnesty offer for the year. Matthew 27, 15 says, "Now, at the feast," that is, at the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which was always the beginning of the Jewish year, "the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted." So Passover amnesty, beginning of the year amnesty. He'd gotten into the habit of doing this. Remember, he's been governor for almost 7 years now. So he basically is trying to make Jesus the amnesty figure. But he's going to manipulate the situation so that the Jews have to agree with him to release Jesus. So verse 16, "They then had a notorious prisoner called Barsabbas. So when they'd gathered, Pilate said to them, whom do you want me to release for you?" So it's Passover amnesty time, and I'm going to give you two choices as to whom you can have as your amnesty release for this year. Barsabbas, as we are told later in Matthew, but over in Mark, which is what I'm looking at right now, Mark 15:7, he was among the rebels in prison. The word rebels here actually has the idea of challengers of government order. And not just simply Roman government order, but of Jewish government order. He was in prison with a other bunch of rebels who had committed murder in the insurrection. Now, I need to correct something that I've seen in some movies and things, that Barabbas was some sort of zealot that was trying to chase out the Romans and return everything to Jewish control. That would have made him a hero of an awful lot of Jewish people and a sympathetic figure that Jewish people would rally around to have released. That is not what Pilate is trying to accomplish here. He wants Jesus to be released. He's made that perfectly clear. And so he is going to give them a choice that he thinks is not a choice. So this Barabbas guy is actually somebody that's murdered Jewish people. He is an enemy, a hated figure in Jewish circles. So Pilate is stacking the deck against Barabbas. And in the favor of Jesus, we have to understand it that way. Because Pilate will be frustrated by the fact that they don't pick the one he's stacking for. So back to our Matthew passage, Matthew 27:17. "So when they'd gathered, Pilate said to them, whom do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus who is called Christ?" So this is Pilate addressing the crowd that has now probably gathered the area near the Tower of Antonia, because it's time for the amnesty announcement. It's still early in the morning. It's probably after 7 o'clock by our time, but probably before 8 o'clock by our time. And he gives them the choice. Do you want Barabbas, the really bad dude that killed a whole bunch of Jewish people? Or do you want this Christos guy, this Jesus guy that you were all cheering about just a few days earlier? Verse 18, Matthew makes this very clear. For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. And then he gives them time to think about this. Meanwhile, verse 19. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, the Bema seat is an official chair of declaration. It can be moved around. It's usually put up on a high place. Since Pilate is having to accommodate Jewish sensitivities, he is outside, probably just outside the front gate of the Praetorium, the Tower of Antonia, on a special decorative area that we'll read about later. And he's seated on his chair, and now he's waiting for them to talk about this for a while. So while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him. So here comes a little message whispered in his ear by one of his retainers, or perhaps a little scroll with a note on it. Have nothing to do with this righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream. And that's all we know about this. Historically, culturally, we know that the Roman people put a lot of stock in dreams, in dream interpretations. And so apparently God had given to Mrs. Pilate, she actually has a name in some of the stories that have grown up from this, and I can't remember it. She had apparently been disturbed in her sleep last night, all about Jesus. And now she's worried because she knows her husband is being asked to condemn him to death. And so her advice to him is, don't do it. Don't condemn him. Get out of this, because I know something's not right because of dreams I had. Now, it is interesting that there are many stories very early on in church history that Mrs. Pilate became a Christian. In fact, she is in some circles a sainted individual. I don't know if that's true, but I do find it interesting that the implication here is that God is intervening in her life. And so that may indicate that she was sensitive enough to the situation that God was in the process of recruiting her. And so I wouldn't be a bit surprised if she did, in fact, become a Christian. Verse number 20. Now, the chief priests and the elders, so this is the Sanhedrin, they've been persuading the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to destroy Jesus. So they've been politicking the whole time that Pilate's been, you know, getting the message from his wife and giving these people a chance to think about it. And so they have somehow stacked the deck back in favor of Barabbas and against Jesus. And so now Pilate is about to get a big shock. So verse number 21, the governor again said to them, so here comes the official ask, which of the two do you want me to release for you? Now he is expecting them to say Jesus, because the crowd should be appalled by the idea of putting Barabbas back out on the street, because he is a murderer, a killer of people, a person that wants to disrupt society. So which of the two do you want me to release for you? And they said back, Barabbas, which would have been a big surprise for Pilate. And so he said to them, well, then what shall I do with Jesus who is called Christos? And they all said to him, let him be crucified, because that's what they'd been schooled to say, because that's what the Sanhedrin wants. And he said back to them, why? What evil has he done? So here again, we can see that Pilate understands that Jesus is not guilty of any capital crime. And he is shocked that they want him dead anyway. And so he tries to, as we would say, reason with them, but they just shouted all the more, let him be crucified. And this is what prompts this story that is exclusive to Matthew. So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, and that's always problematic, because he is charged with keeping the peace. And if he can't keep the peace, he will lose his job, possibly even his life. So when he sees it looks almost as if a riot is getting started here at the front of the Praetorium, he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. You see to it yourselves. So he tries to say, I won't take responsibility for this. The man does not deserve to be killed. You guys are going to have to take responsibility. And he says this in a public forum. And so all the people answered, his blood be on us and on our children. So they play right into his hands. Then he released for them Barabbas. And then he had Jesus scourged, and then eventually delivered him to be crucified. But the Matthew account does not tell the full story. There's still bits and pieces that we can pull in from other passages. Because Pilate, even though he's got the crowd to take responsibility in a public forum, he still doesn't want to hand Jesus over for execution.